right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with my host, co-host, Cliffy D. I'd love to ask you how you were doing. We know how you're doing, especially as Alouettes fans, especially after this. Wow. After the showing that the Alouettes had last week versus Edmonton and the anemic offense, to see what they were able to pull off versus an Ottawa Red Blacks franchise who is really one of the top contenders in the East Division, which is, I don't want to say it was surprising, but I was very happy to see it.
Tim, there's just no other words to describe just how unbelievable. I mean, you could not have scripted it any better. For Montreal to walk into TD Place, one of the most feared, even one of the most intimidating places as far as fan participation and just overall atmosphere goes, for Montreal to walk in there and essentially kick dirt in the face of the Ottawa Red Blacks in their own barn. Hey, once again, don't ask me. We'll talk about it for sure more, but you know what? I got to hear what Kirk Cousins has to say about that.
You like that? You like that?
Ah, Kirk Cousins. Hey, it was great to hear him again this week.
You know what? One more time.
Okay.
You like that? You like that?
He sounds the same the second time. But you know what? It's fine with by me. Fine by me. Okay. I get it. We are Alouette fans. We can be homers, but we try to have an open mind of these type of things. And you know, I think for us, and we'll talk about the positives. Obviously, what we're looking forward to next is the home game versus Winnipeg. And that's a huge thing. It's just a matter of how they're going to react coming off of this huge win. It's not the same as Saskatchewan, but maybe it will be just slightly different because after knocking off such a strong team over the past, last year and at the beginning of this year. So everything came. I was at the game itself. And I, by the way, my first time back to TD Place since its relaunch, reinception, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I think the last time I was there in Ottawa at Frank Clair was during the Renegades era. So that's how long it's been.
Now, let me ask you, I was going to say, overall, what would you say your impression is? Because I've been to TD Place a few times since they reopened as TD Place, and I've got nothing but great things to say about it. I mean, say what you will about the Red Blacks, and whether you're an Alouettes fan or Red Blacks fan or what have you, you can say what you will about that, and that's fine. But speaking from the overall stadium experience, I can tell you myself, I absolutely love it. I actually think it's one of the nicest stadiums in the league for sure. And yeah, especially when you compare it to places like even our own home barn, Percival Molson Stadium, I think is, again, I'm biased here, but I do think it's one of the best stadiums. And TD Place is right there next to it. I mean, not just geographically, but as far as the overall fan experience. So I'm curious to know, Tim, based on your first time there since 2005, I think you said it was
something like that. It was the Renegades era, I think, that I saw a game.
So I'd really like to hear, and please tell everybody out there listening your impressions of TD Place.
Well, when I get to TD Place, and we will, by the way, we will get back to the, we'll talk about the Owls victory this week. I walked in and I thought TD had a hell of an atmosphere. It really, really did. And this was the first time for me sitting on the north side. I didn't sit on the new south side. So this is my first time on the north side. And I just think that the way that everything, because when you watch the games on TV, especially from TD Place, you have to get your bearings. I knew the old stadium. So I had to get the bearings of where everything was. So I'm there finally. And I'm sitting at my seat at the 20-yard line, multiple rows up, you know, the double letters on the north side. I got my bearings. Now it's like, oh, okay. Well, now I know that the condos are going along. Is that Lansdowne? See, I don't know Ottawa. What's the street where the condos are? Is that Lansdowne?
Bank Street. No, that's Bank Street.
Okay, so they're going along Bank Street, and they have everything set up there now. And And you had the pedestrian walkway on the other side, you know, going into the stadium. And, you know, when we came into the stadium, you're first and foremost, I'm going to get this. And, you know, I've just been living how the Alouettes do the shuttles and with the STM and whatnot. I want to give props, huge props to not only to the Red Black organization, but also to OC Transpo, if they're involved in this, and having their shuttle system. It's amazing. You know, for free, you're bussed into the stadium. You know, that was my first experience right there. So we go in, you're walking along, and you have the new mall. I guess it's the restaurants and the cinema to your right. You have the arena, the main arena, to your left. And what's cool is that because the way that they've set everything up for the Red Blacks is that you can get your ticket scanned and walk through the arena, the bowels of the arena first before you go into the stadium because they're all connected. The screen is done perfectly. It's just the right size. I find the one in Molson is just a touch small. And I was at the opposite end and I could see everything the way that I wanted to. The fans coexist together. And I think one of the most interesting things was the message that came from Smiling Hank himself to say, listen, it's football. We're all fans here. Be respectful of everybody and just enjoy the game. And I was like, holy crap. I mean, I don't know. I've never dealt with what it's like over in Saskatchewan. So I've heard good and bad things about Saskatchewan. Mind you, hear your horror stories about Grey Cup also. But all in all, you know, you're covered completely on both sides, basically. So but we were covered. I felt very knowledgeable fans into the game. New into clap, new into boo, new into cheer, even though the Red Black fans didn't have much to cheer about this past week. But being that I've not been to a lot of the other stadiums, I'd put it up there. I would put it right up there. I haven't been to New BMO, haven't been to the new Tim Hortons. I put it right up there. It's probably some of the best stadiums that I've been to in the CFL. I haven't been to Vancouver yet. I haven't been to, you know, Investors Group, McMahon, Commonwealth. So I don't have much to gauge on except for Sky Dome and Ivor Wynn.
The classics.
So yeah, I was very impressed. Very impressed. And what's funny is where my seats were located. And I joke about how high up I was. If I were to get, which I want to do is, you know, go to Grey Cup in 17 in Ottawa, that's exactly where I would get my seats. You got to see everything. I felt like I moved myself down maybe 10 or 15 rows, if possible. Mm-hmm. Perfect seats. Perfect seats, in my opinion.
There you go. You can't beat that. Now, it's interesting. I heard you just say that the fans knew when to clap and when to boo and all that stuff. Now, I'm just curious because one thing that I've noticed, and again, going from my own experiences at TV Place, I find that the fans, they're definitely vocal. They're very passionate. I mean, they definitely love their football. Like, yes. I mean, that's been clear as day, much to the chagrin of many of the naysayers who thought that, okay, this is Ottawa's third time around.
A lot of red-black gear.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, that's, like I said, the passion is there. There's no question about that. People in Ottawa definitely love their football. One of the things I did notice, and I've seen it more, again, it's mostly with Alouettes games, obviously, but I found a lot of the times the fans there were making noise on offense. Did you find a lot of that yourself? Because it's something I've seen myself a few times. And
I had some people behind us, and they were throwing out expletives and stuff like that, and their own version of Gentil Alouette, mm-hmm. their own version, their NSFW version,
not safe for work,
that their version. So and other things, but besides that, I guess so. I mean, I don't know if it was. To me, it was really noticeable, at least on my side on the north. But, you know, I felt was weird, too, by the way, and I guess I'm not used to this, is that not only do they have cheerleaders, but they got a cheer team. And mm-hmm. my thought was, aren't your cheerleaders or dancers, whatever you want to call them, being underutilized? That's what I thought, because it was usually cheerleaders would do one segment, and then you'd have their cheer team do another one, or they'd be doing it on opposite sides or something like that. I guess I'm used to having the four groups of our lovely ladies from the Montreal Alouettes cheerleaders teams do their stuff. With six times a half? Yeah, six, mm-hmm. I think something like that.
At least, yeah.
So That's one probably for me the one of the things. And you know what? I know I bitched about it earlier in the year. One thing I actually did miss was a stats board. Mm. I actually missed having a stats board.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things that it's very, very simple and very, so very easy to get accustomed to. So yeah,
and I can holds appreciate less that. It holds less than Molson, but yet they were sold out. Something that they have not been able to do at Molson since the numbers. Anyways, Numbergate. Since Numbergate, right before the new Molson was built or expanded, Numbergate. But yeah. So, but going forward, let's talk about this game. This game was absolutely I think I texted you this after the game, and it was three short sentences, if I remember correctly. It was, I think it was. Was it best game ever?
Actually texted it. I just pulled it up now.
Yeah, bring it now.
Total complete game.
That's what it was. It was.
There's total, no question.
Total complete game by the Alouettes.
And I had to laugh just watching the game because it just felt like, you almost felt cheated. Like, how many times this year have we said, this team has the talent, this team has all the pieces in place, it's just a matter of executing. And lo and behold, they went out and did it. They actually went out and executed. And it's such a novel concept because when they actually worked their plan, great thing. I mean, would you have ever pegged Kevin Glenn for throwing 5 touchdowns in a game? Again, with all due respect to Kev, I sure as hell wouldn't have. But my goodness, he carved them up. He carved up the Ottawa Red Blacks.
And,
I mean,
yeah,
and this
true.
Is, again, one of the best teams in, if not the Eastern Division, then the entire league. And he just straight up dummied them. There's just no response to them. Even when Smiling Hank, you know, he managed to get a couple touchdowns, but I mean, for the most part, he was just owned, completely owned. And Montreal just played like they were on fire. And my God, was it ever good to watch? I mean, it just felt so good to actually see this team living up to its potential. And again, hats off to everybody on all aspects of the field. I mean, defense, we've come to know them to be outstanding. Special teams, they were on point. I mean, Stefan Logan was getting great field position just about every return. But this offense,
just one mistake by Stefan in that game. Just one.
I never said he was perfect.
No, but that's the thing. It was just one mistake. The ball was turned over. I always felt it was a little, I didn't get to see the play that well. I know they were reviewing it, and it wasn't made really clear because everybody – I don't know how everybody watches, and this seems to be a thing that I'm doing after every game, whether it be after a fumble, after a touchdown, or whatever it may be. Has anybody ever noticed the and you and I have talked about this, the lime green flag that the red hat has?
Mm-hmm.
Now I was wondering, what did that mean? I reached out to the CFL to find out what it meant, and it finally dawned on me. They're putting up that flag to signal that touchdown was good. The extra point was good. The field goal was good. The turnover, it was a turnover. So I'm looking at him for that Stefan Logan fumble. And I didn't really see – I'm waiting for him to put the hand up, and he really didn't. And, you know, there was no reason for the ref to make any comment. But if anybody didn't know, that's what that lime green flag is for. It's basically to let the refs know that it's good or whatever. The Owls, I said, it was a complete game. Only 6 penalties. 6. 6. That's it.
Yeah. And Ottawa, true to their form, they are the most penalized team in the league, and mm-hmm. they lived up to that billing very much on Friday night. I mean, they registered 13 penalties, and a lot of those were just backbreakers in the sense that every time Henry Burris and his offense tried to move the ball, and they did a decent enough job moving the chains, but then a penalty would come up and just move them right back. And mm-hmm. Ottawa fans, we've been there. We Alouette fans can definitely relate and feel your pain in that sense. It's frustrating, and they're but for the grace of God go we, because we've certainly been victims that I can't tell you how many times where we've had those kind of penalties that just take the wind out of your sails. And I really think that's what happened with Ottawa on Friday night, was just bad penalties and taking on like this defense again. You got a lot of people were sort of looking past.
This is the best thing that we've been able to talk about the Owls all season. No matter the score of the game, is that the defense has been there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's one thing to win 41-3 like we did against Saskatchewan, because again, and I'm not trying to pile on the Riders here, but they're really not a very good team. Let's just call a spade a spade. They're really not a very good team. Maybe one day they will be again, but this is not their year. So it's one thing to beat them by that score, but for us to go into Ottawa, which is a significantly better team, defending Eastern champion, Eastern Division champion, you got the most outstanding player in Henry Burris behind center. I mean, I can definitely see why 94% of people with the CFL pick'em chose the Red Blacks to just dominate the
Alouettes. I'll be fair. I rarely play Homer. I actually did pick Ottawa to win. I really did.
Well, and no one would blame you. Like, again, I don't blame the 94% of the people, but, and I'm not one of those, you know, super homers that are just going to be like, you know, vote for the Alouettes no matter what. I mean, you got to be objective as well. And again, just on paper, this game had all the makings of a red black blowout, but this Alouettes team, man, I'm at a loss for words, quite frankly. And now, I think it's probably not good because I'm doing a podcast, but just the way that these guys actually came together, and like I said, they just you get to a point where you're just like, enough's enough. I'm sick and tired of being the doormat. And they fought back, and they, like I said, as I said in the alternative this week, they walked into Ottawa's barn, the Red Blacks' barn, and punched them square in the face, and then punched them again and again and again. And that's what you got to do sometimes. You just got to go in there and start swinging, and you're going to connect more often than not. It was beautiful to watch Montreal play that type of football. Like, mm-hmm. You talk about Montreal Alouettes football. That was very much Montreal Alouettes football, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that got lost in this was this was Daron Carter's return. You know, first thing we had to go through was really weird, and we're probably going to talk about it again because the judge didn't render he left the decision open to a later date or at his discretion. We had to deal with the Daron Carter arbitration hearing on Wednesday leading up to the game, and that in itself is weird. You know, first we talked about it before, the long delay in before the actual arbitration hearing and not an actual decision made. Does it seem to you that we may never hear about this again? Do you think that this is just going to be completely, it's not the right term to use, but swept under the rug and people will be like, oh, he was supposed to get suspended, that type of thing?
Part of me hopes so. Part of me hopes that, you know, enough time has gone by. I mean, honestly, unless you were like an Alouettes fan or a Red Blacks fan, you kind of forgot about it, just maybe with all the other shenanigans and whatnot going on in this league.
Oh, circus, man.
Call it what you will, but I think a lot of people had sort of forgot, oh yeah, Daron Carter was suspended for a game, and you know, how is that going to play into things? And just the, you know, instant drama that could have resulted if whether Carter would have been suspended or not for last Friday's game. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, he wasn't. He's still able to play, and look at how we responded. And I'll give Daron a lot of credit. I mean, I've always said that he's a very cerebral player, and he knows what he's doing out there. Even when he looks like he's out of control, I think there is very much a part of him that is very much in control. Mm-hmm. And you look at the two touchdowns that he scored, and that's the thing. He scored two touchdowns in Ottawa. Like, you want to talk about silencing.
They just weren't regular touchdowns either, man. These are Daron Carter type of touchdowns.
Yeah, and he just silenced the crowd. Like, I mean, you could hear a pin drop. At least that's the impression I got watching the game on TV, was fans, I think, were just stunned, first and foremost, that Carter was able to come in and, you know, have his way with the Red Blacks, as it were. But to his credit, like, when he scored those touchdowns, like, he wasn't boisterous, he wasn't showboating, he wasn't doing anything to, you know, throw fuel on the fire. Like, he celebrated with his teammates, went back to the bench, and that was it. Like, it was almost like making a statement. Like, he was just sort of like, you know what, I know I'm better than you guys, and my work's going to speak for itself. And I have to give Daron a ton of credit for that sort of attitude. The best way to win or show everybody that you're the best is just do your job. Mm-hmm. And do your job and win. And that's what Daron did on Friday night. And my hat's off to him. The guy is absolutely fantastic.
Team leaders for the Alouettes for passing. Obviously, Kevin Glenn had a perfect game. I think his passing rating was 180, I think. I mean, the dude, yeah, his efficiency rating was 180. He threw for, you know, he completed 83.3% of his passes. He was 25 of 30, 382 yards, 5 TDs, and most importantly, Cliff, zero picks.
Yeah.
Rushing-wise, Brandon Rutley was the leader for the team. 8 rushes for 47 yards. Done sparingly, but yet they also, the Alouettes threw quite a bit of wrinkles, and probably one of the bigger ones was that B.J. Cunningham touchdown around end, his 12-yard touchdown.
How about that? I mean, the guy, you know what, the guy can score touchdowns all day long. I mean, he's just been an absolute gem for Montreal this season. But you know him as a receiver. But they flipped the script a little bit, the Alouettes. And again, if this was Anthony Calvillo's doing, I'm color me impressed, because no one expected Cunningham to just be used in a rushing situation.
Yeah, they tried it once with DeRon Carter. He got nailed for a 5-yard loss, but I think they saw something and they were able to try it again. So leader for receiving for the Alouettes went to Nick Lewis and to DeRon Carter. DeRon had 5 receptions, 6 targets for 126 yards and 2 TDs. Nick Lewis, 8 receptions, 9 targets, and 102 yards and 1 touchdown. But everybody got into it. And, you know, they I don't know. It's funny. You look at the yards. The teams are almost even in yards. The teams are almost even in time of possession. And you'd think the game would have been a lot closer, but no, it wasn't. Now, all the positivity aside, there were a few things that were a little scary at the beginning to watch. You know, first, the defense, I forget his, it was... Oh, what is his name? And I should be able to bring this up real quickly. Here it is. Ethan Davis. He got burned, and I was saying, oh no, this is happening again. Now Ethan's he's the one that's taking over for Billy Parker, right?
One of. I mean, they've been sort of switching things out, switching positions around a little bit, trying to see what's the best fit based on whether Parker will be in the lineup or not. And again, unfortunately, for the second straight game, he was out due to injury. So
right.
But I mean, Ethan Davis.
But that 58-yard touchdown that he got burned on in the second quarter, I was like, "Oh, here we go again. Here we go again."
It had all the makings. I mean, and again, Chris Williams is earlier this season in Montreal just torched Montreal. So, yeah, as soon as you see that Smiling Hank was able to connect with Williams for a touchdown, yeah, you get that sort of little sinking feeling, I guess you can call it, and like, oh geez, this is where the wheels are going to fall off. But
right
to Montreal's credit, they got back on the horse and kept on producing. So
they did, and I think one of the two biggest things that really stood out for the first half, obviously the Hail Mary, oh my Smiling Hank. Now the Owls were called for a pass interference on that, and it was true. That was horrible. That was Bear Woods, right?
Yeah, Bear Woods with his...
He was face masking, basically.
Face guarding. But football 101, turn around and address the ball. Are you kidding me? I like Bear
and
Woods.
And the Owls never had a hand on that tip, by the way. It went from one out, from one red-black player to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a gorgeous... I'm just sitting there, too. It was a gorgeous play. But
and this is why, like Aaron Rodgers, you cannot count out a Henry Burris. No, I mean, say what you will about his attitude, or you know, any of these other things that people are starting to dog on him for a little bit, but the guy knows how to play. The guy's a gamer. Like, he's not afraid to just heave the rock up there and just have faith in the receivers. And again, I will say he was very fortunate, because I guarantee if Bear Woods had turned around and saw the bloody ball coming towards him, he would have batted it away or done something else. But this face guarding stuff, oh, I was sitting there with a knot in my stomach watching this. Like, come on. Defense 101. Like, if I was Noel Thorpe, I'd be tearing a strip off this guy, because as great as a player as he is, and intense and ferocious as he can be on the field, that is not defensive play right there. Right. And if you're not able to properly guard in that sense, find someone who can. Like, someone else should have maybe stepped in there and gotten in that scrum there, because every time I watch the highlights of this game, I mean, for the most part, I'm thrilled with the outcome, but to see that, like, and again, that very well could have been a make or break play for the Alouettes as well, because yeah, at that point, Ottawa was very much still in that game. It was just once the second half got going, that's when Montreal really kicked it in overdrive, and
yeah,
Ottawa just couldn't keep up.
It could have been 23-9 at that point, but it, you know, it went where the Owls were only up by 7. What preceded that, though, by the way, which I know had gotten a lot of people talking, especially Red Black fans, was the Duron Carter touchdown. Before that, the 67-yard touchdown. And the hand-to-hand combat, that is the best way to describe it, the hand-to-hand combat between him and is it Canna?
Actually, Abdul Kanne.
Kanne? Okay. So that was an interesting play. That was an interesting play. And being there, first, you know, you see the touchdown, you see the flag up, and immediately I go and I look at the replay board. And it was clear as day, and I saw the way it worked. I said, wait a minute, that has to be on Ottawa. Because their hand-to-hand combat was actually started, you know, within the 5-yard zone, and it couldn't have been on him. So then, but Coach Campbell went ahead and challenged it, trying to challenge it for offensive pass interference. And watching the replays again, I was still stuck in my head that they were within the 5-yard zone, and it couldn't have been on us, so it was going to be overturned, which it was. But coming back, and you and I talked about this before we started tonight, Cliff. Coming back and watching the actual play. I was like, and again, I may be a Homer Alouettes fan, but if I think that a play could have been been called a different way, I will say so. And I thought at that time, once I saw the replay again, that it easily could have been called that another way, the way that they were fighting about it, with fighting for the route. It looked like maybe Duron put his hand on his face mask, grabbed down. But I think at one point you didn't see what I saw, though, did you?
No, because then it just happened to blink by. It's just maybe it's the way that the TSN camera crew sort of captured. They were focusing obviously more on Glenn until the pass to Carter. But once I actually sat and watched it, like you said, you watch the replay of it again and take another look at things. And yeah, I could definitely see both Kanne and Carter were definitely getting handsy with each other within that first 5 yards, which again, you're well within your rights to do so. The one thing I did notice, though, and again, without seeing every single thing, like the angle wasn't the best for it, but at one point, Kanne is actually down literally at the 55-yard line. Like, I don't know if he was knocked down or if he tripped or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Because the camera didn't exactly show that and it was just focusing on the ball sailing into Carter's hands. I don't know if maybe there's a little extracurricular there that it was the reason why Kanne couldn't cover his men, and Duron was, from that point on, untouched going into the end zone. So it's one of those things that I really would have liked to see a little bit more of another angle from it just to see. But, I mean, I guess it is what it is. And unfortunately, the refs can't call everything, right?
Right, right. But you know what? I thought after looking at it, I'm thinking, maybe not. But we spoke with somebody else this week and got their opinion. So, you know, I was wrong. It was the way that it stood out. And obviously, Carter's second touchdown. That was a Duron Carter touchdown just by his leap alone.
Absolutely. And not to mention, too, going up against a former teammate in Mitchell White.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, and again, Mitchell White, like I said, I've said enough good things about him when he was on the Alouettes, and I definitely think he'll definitely be a big-time player for the Ottawa Redblacks. But on that particular play, and again, there's no shame in – there's always a saying there's no shame in losing to the best. Well, I mean, to have your lunch eaten by Duron Carter, if you're a defensive back, that's not – or a cornerback, I should say, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
You'll be better for the experience.
No. My only concern – and I did have a couple – but I think the one concern for me that really stood out was, and it happened actually on both sides of the ball, but Anthony Farrah's lack thereof of being able to kick extra points twice, I think it was, and they just weren't missed wide. What did you notice? Anything out of the ordinary? Was it from Farrah or was it from the holder that may have been causing this to occur? Because these two points, I think it was 2 points, these two missed kicks could have been huge for the Owls.
Potentially. And again, let's not forget, this is only Ferris' second game with the Alouettes. And also, too, Vernon Adams is a second game as the holder now for Ferris. So, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time for these guys to really establish that rhythm. And it's going to come with time. So, I mean, I'll in this particular instance, I'll chalk it up to growing pains or just, these guys feeling each other out and just trying to get that chemistry down, really, is what it comes down to. Because, again, this is something that's been happening league-wide, too. I mean, once you decided that you're going to start kicking extra points from the 32-yard line, I mean, you set yourself up for any number of things to go wrong. So, I mean, there was a time when this was like an automatic point, and it's not so much anymore. And this is something that we've been seeing league-wide as well. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give Farah and Adams the benefit of the doubt for this particular game. I mean, it's unfortunate, and you're absolutely right. These 2 points could have been crucial had Ottawa actually showed up to play in the second half. But at this point, I'm like I said, we'll call it growing pains, and hopefully they'll be better this coming Friday against Winnipeg.
Yes, and my only real other thing that I want to bring up first, which I don't understand, what was with keeping Vernon Adams Jr. in the game for that one play that was an absolute disaster?
Well,
after he was able to, he was on the third down team and was able to get I just don't get it.
Well, Montreal did this 2 years ago with when they had both Jonathan Crompton and Tanner Marsh, and Crompton was the actual starting quarterback, and he took the lion's share of the reps. But every once in a while, you'd see Marsh in there get the first down just by plunging forward, and then he'd stay in for a play or two just to sort of keep, I guess, the other team guessing. And I'm wondering if maybe that's what it was with keeping Adams in for that play. And to be fair, I saw a lot of negative comments about Vernon Adams with that thing. Last time I checked, Vernon Adams doesn't snap the ball to Vernon Adams. So let's take a look at it. It was a horrible snap.
Yes.
You can't fault Adams for it. So I really didn't understand the vitriol that I saw on Twitter and the rest of social media just harping on this guy because his center doesn't snap the ball properly to him. That's all of a sudden Vernon Adams' fault. Like, come on, give me a break. I mean, the guy was kind of thrown in there. He's being used in short yard situations, and this offense is not designed for him at all. So, again, it's annoying to see plays like that, and it could just as easily happen to Kevin Glenn or Rakeem Cato as well. So, personally, I thought it was just a little unfair to be harping on this guy because, again, his job right now, Vernon Adams, it's short yardage situations and holding the ball for Anthony Farrah to make kicks.
Right. No.
What do you expect from the guy? That's what
I know. But still, I was like, what the hell? My other thing was, and again, why is Jim Popp challenging the most inane plays? he did it in the first quarter, first drive, drive by Ottawa. And I'm trying to get I'm looking at the play by play here, and I'm trying to get the actual because they should have it on here. Well, it wasn't the first one because it was a fake field goal play. Which, by the way, that first field goal try they called a fake field goal. I swear there was a muff somewhere.
Do you really? I mean, again, I can only see.
I had to go back and watch the replay again, but I swear that was not. They're calling it officially. The league's calling it a fake. But to me, no.
Well, sure looked like a fake. Maybe it was improvisation by Danny O'Brien for the Red Blacks. But I mean, the thing that like made me laugh, and I even mentioned it, was Jovan Johnson read that perfectly.
Yes.
And this guy's a former Red Black. He's seen it numerous times. He knows what their special teams is all about in Ottawa. Mm. You can't, like the old saying is, you can't BS a BSer. Mm. And like, Jovan Johnson knows that these guys like to try the trickery, the mind games with when it comes to special teams. Like, of course he's going to see that perfectly, and good on him for doing that. That was great. Like, again, because as soon as I saw it coming a mile away, that the minute O'Brien stood up, like, oh crap, this is how Ottawa manages to extend their drives more often than not. But boom, as soon as Johnson sacked him, like, oh yeah, again. How could anyone be surprised? I mean, at least of all Johnston. Like, he's been there. He's done that. When it comes to this Ottawa team, he knows them in and out. He knows all their little tricks. So
they didn't mention it here. It's not mentioned. And I'm very surprised it's actually not mentioned here in the play-by-play for the stats set up by the league. But it was Ottawa's first.
Ottawa's first series,
yeah,
for sure.
Ottawa's first series. And was it on a catch? I'm trying to remember what it was now. Anyways, please, Jim Popp, stop challenging plays that really shouldn't be. You're wasting time, and I understand that you have all this technology now that you have in front of you with the tablets and being able to see the live feed and stuff like that and be able to go over replays, but really?
You got to have, like, there's people up in the broadcast booth that, or spotters, you call them, and, you know, they're able to get in touch with Jim and let him know what's going on. But I think sometimes you got to use your own best judgment. Like I said, you got to trust your instincts. I mean, like, it's great to have those eyes in the sky to see things and maybe just to double check. But I mean, you got to be 100% on this, and you got to, yeah, have your staff's back when it comes to things like that. But at the same time, you got to sort of trust yourself a little bit, and you just because they see something, is it really something that is worth wasting a challenge on? And that's really what it came down to, was he ended up burning a challenge for nothing. And I don't know. I kind of expect more from the coaching staff to be able to sort of rein themselves in and really truly think about it, especially the first series. Like, what were you expecting to accomplish in the first series, making a challenge like that?
Yeah,
like,
I didn't get that.
I don't know. I mean, you can't argue with the results. At the end of the day,
no.
Montreal won, so I mean, we should, you know, shut our mouths and be happy. But at the same time, it's little things like that that you're just like, and if there's ever a wonder why our faith in the coaching staff can be shaken at times, it's little things like that. And right. If you don't take care of the little things, they have no choice but to become big things.
I can understand the one in the fourth quarter where Montreal challenged for roughing on the kicker. I don't know if there really was if Medeiros really was acting a little bit. I never got to see the replay on the roughing the kicker penalty. But
Tim, are you suggesting that someone from Ottawa was embellishing a fall?
Well,
surely you jest.
I guess supporting actor. Supporting actor goes to. But yeah. Okay. Oh, all in all, though, very happy. If anybody remembers from two episodes ago, without blinking, and we were talking about the two-game stretch for the Owls and what it actually meant to them based on the fact that everybody, you know, there were some naysayers out there saying that the Owls were going to go 0-2, I happened to mention this. I think over the next two the next two games on the road, I think they're going to be 1-1. I do. I don't know who they're going to beat. But I think they will go 1-1 on this road trip, which I think will help this team quite a bit. And then I'm happy to say that I was right. I said how close the Owls were to going 2-0 on this road trip.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, that was a very winnable game in Edmonton. And again, like you had said, this game was going to, or this road trip, whatever you want to call it, this two game odyssey, if you will. You said they were going to go 1-1, yeah. And I absolutely believed you, and I think we were both sort of in agreement that we had an idea which game was going to be the win and which one was going to be the loss. And my gosh, I mean, you were right, but we were wrong. If that makes any sense? And
yes. I was thinking it to be. I was thinking it to be the other way around. That it would have been knock off of Edmonton and a loss to Ottawa. But the Owls are now back in the thick of things in the CFL East.
Yeah,
and just by looking at how this week went, I mean, it's just so messed up. You know, it's true. There's a lot of parity. You know, looking at what happened this week alone, I mean, the games are just complete and utter blowouts, right? And stranger things have happened. You know, we were talking about the Rough Riders earlier, and, you know, there wasn't as much of a circus this week as there was last week in the whole – the whole thing with Bo Levi and Saskatchewan and da 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 da. But still, after verifying with our source, the most gracious Steve Daniel, who is the CFL's head statistician, he did confirm to us that this past week's average margin of victory, which was, I think it was 30.2. I'm trying to remember what it was off the top of my head here. That it was within the top three league history all time of being one of the highest average margin of victories in league history. The highest being July 17th to 19th, 2002, where the average margin of victory that week was at a stunning 32.25 points per game. So yeah, I don't think it. You know, there are weeks that happen like that, right? And moving forward, like the last time that the Owls blew out an opponent, we're talking about this at the very beginning of the show, it's a little bit different going into this game versus Winnipeg, right? I mean, just hear from DJ from RDS, that looks like both Kenny Stafford and Terrell Sutton are going to be available versus the home game on Friday versus Winnipeg, which you know, most people think, you know, oh, they're changing things up. It's going to hurt the team chemistry. But I think, you know, after last week's team win, complete team win, things can just go from there. Just a matter of keeping the momentum, right?
Absolutely. And one thing that they're going to have to realize, too, is they're not going to be facing the same Winnipeg team that they won in Winnipeg against back in week one. I mean, Winnipeg has picked up their socks and turned themselves around, and they've been playing some really outstanding football as of late.
Just change your quarterback. Sometimes a change will help.
Well, and yeah, you can definitely attribute a lot of the success to Matt Nichols being in under center as opposed to Drew Willey. But to me, I look at Winnipeg and their defense is ridiculous. I would put them on par with Montreal and Hamilton as far as one of the better defensive units in this league.
Like not the same team. It's true. Not the same team that Montreal played in week one.
No. And they too were going through the same things that Montreal were going through as far as you know, a famous offensive coordinator trying to find his way still, a head coach that maybe is on the hot seat and maybe shouldn't be where he is. But again, Winnipeg, like I said, they've managed to turn themselves around, and now there is serious discussion now about these guys being not just a playoff team, but you look at out in the West, you got Calgary, you got BC, and you got Winnipeg, and it's more than likely, barring something catastrophic happening, it's going to be one of those three teams that's going to be leading the West. Like, that's going to be your playoff situation, is those three teams. And I'm still not entirely sure where it's going to end up. But I mean, those are the three teams that are definitely going to be in the discussion when it comes to the playoffs. And yeah, like, Montreal just simply cannot take this team lightly. Not at all. Not the way that they've been playing as of late. And again, I have to believe that they remember that, that week one victory Winnipeg does. And they'll be looking to spoil the party for us as well. You know, the turnabout's fair play, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. But, you know, with having, again, getting back Kenny, look at the height and the speed that we now have. Getting just those two players back. You know, I said BJ Cunningham, again, I said I mentioned it a couple weeks ago, we hated losing SJ Green. But what has been done is just, it's been a coming out party for BJ Cunningham. So It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, BJ has just been on another level without question. And just the idea of the receiving core being Daron Carter, Kenny Stafford, BJ Cunningham, and Nick Lewis. I mean, that's...
And throw in still. Again, understaffed a little bit. Same with Jaguar. You know, obviously, Kenny Stafford being activated... Who most likely do you think is going to be deactivated, so to speak?
It'll definitely be Corbin Laux. I mean, like, give him credit. He was able to hang in there for the most part. And like I said, he had that unfortunate fumble against the BC Lions a couple of weeks ago. And he's been, for the most part, kind of quiet with the exception of a couple of plays here and there. But he'll be fine. He's one of those players that give him the reps and eventually he'll find his way for sure. Like if this was one of those situations, kind of like what our secondary was going through with Jonathan Mincy and Ethan Davis, sort of learning on the job like that. They've been allowed to make mistakes and learn from them. I think the same thing could happen with Laux as well. But I mean, at the end of the day, you got to put your best foot forward. And if you got a Kenny Stafford coming back, there's just no way that you've got Corbin Laux dressing. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, it's. I actually agree with you because I said unfortunately somebody has to sit down. I mean the Owls have played Winnipeg well at home over the past couple of years. I mean they're 27-17-2 in the history at home, but the Owls have lost the last 4 of 5 versus Winnipeg. So I guess it's just a matter of they need to be able to concentrate specifically on how. You know what? It's too bad that they can't just run exactly what they did last week. Because if they keep penalties down, you know, if they're able to get their guys open, if they're able to control the defense, if the defense is able to control the Winnipeg offense.
Yeah. And once again, these young cornerbacks, the young secondary, they're going to have to deal with a very dangerous weapon in Clarence Denmark.
Right. And we don't know about Billy Parker yet. To be fair, when we're taping this, we don't know what the status is of Billy Parker. Even though he is on the sixth game, so that may sort of lead to where we know what the answer is going to be, but nothing's been set in stone as of yet.
Correct. But again, as far as the offense on this Bombers team, I mean, you definitely got to be able to stifle Andrew Harris because the guy is a threat, not just rushing, but so, you know, he's got a good pair of hands on him as well. So that's going to be key. But once again, like I said, Denmark, you definitely got to neutralize him as much as possible. And a guy like Jonathan Mincy is just going to have to tail him once again and just play him hard, play him fast, but don't do anything stupid because the guy will own you. And that's just the way he is. He's been given a new lease on life in Winnipeg. And like I said, that's definitely the guy you got to watch out for. And this defense, like I said, they've had so many takeaways. Kevin Fogg, for example, has just been – he's come out of nowhere and has been just absolutely outstanding in Winnipeg's secondary. And Mo Leggett, too. He had a pick six last week against Toronto. And he's the kind of guy, too, that you just give him just a little hole to get into, he will burn you. So – Montreal just has to, again, same as what they did against Winnipeg. They just got to keep moving the ball around. Kevin Glenn's got to find his receiver, all of his receivers, and just little things at a time. Like, just you don't have to go for that big play over and over again. You got the opportunity, find your receivers, find your checkdowns, and just move the ball 10 yards at a time if you have to. You got Sutton coming back, and that's going to be a great counter for Andrew Harris, I think. You got to put him to use, and he'll be raring to go as well. That's one thing about Sutton is the guy loves to play. The guy loves to get his hands dirty and just truck people over. And I'm definitely expecting to see a lot of that on Friday.
Do you think they're gonna add a little more running game to it, or are they gonna think they're gonna bring him in slowly? And because we saw that, you know, he was getting the bulk of the rushes usually in the first half, but then no matter what the score was, the Alouettes would kind of keep it to a passing game rather than a running game.
Well, and one thing that they did against Ottawa too that I liked was one thing I've been saying all along is get JC Beaulieu involved in the game. Like, mm-hmm. You've got a halfback, a tight end, whatever you want to call him, in that formation, and the guy's been a dual threat. And there's something about playing in Ottawa that seems to bring out the best in JC Beaulieu, and it's amazing to see. So, I mean, if you're going to try to develop more of a ground game by having Sutton in there, and if Rutley's able to dress, I mean, if you got those two in there, I mean, that's a great 1-2 punch as well. But if they can find a way to get Beaulieu some touches as well, I mean, if you just keep him guessing, like, again, everybody's expecting Kevin Glenn to air it out. And especially after you throw 5 touchdowns, it's kind of hard not to. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if that's what everybody's expecting, then why not switch things up and just, you know, pound and ground. That's the best way to do it. And the best backs to do it with are guys like Sutton, who has a little bit more muscle on his frame and can lower the shoulder and clear a lane as well. And then you got Beaulieu, who, like I said, is a physical specimen and a dual threat. So why not? You got these weapons at your disposal. Why not use them and just keep everybody guessing? And I think that's really going to be key for Montreal if they're wanting to get their fourth win of the season at home in front of their fans, is to just do the same thing that you did against Ottawa. Just keep things interesting. Keep mixing it up and give them so many looks that they have no idea which direction to go in.
And again, keep the penalties to a minimum.
It's so true. What else can you say? I mean, only 6 penalties last Friday. Like, that's remarkable. Like, how many times have we seen that flag on the ground and just were prepared for the worst? And then all of a sudden it was, you know, penalty, Ottawa. Like, okay, well, I guess you're used to it with Ottawa because, like I said, they are the most penalized team. But how refreshing was it to not see Montreal just shooting themselves in mm-hmm. the foot?
I'm curious to know, when we didn't do the math before we started the show this week, to what the Al's average penalties are in their wins versus their losses. And it's one thing I should have done, but I didn't. But keep it up. I mean, 6 penalties, that's fine. Let the other team make the mistakes. By the way, Jim Popp, by the way, is he's 2-5 all time versus Winnipeg. He got his first home win. Yeah, it was his first. I'm good. 2-5. He is 2-5. So the Owls have won 2 straight at home. Jim Popp has versus Winnipeg. But as we've seen, one small thing. And the last thing we're going to talk about, speaking of a small thing, but it was a huge thing because to me, it will make one of the plays, if not make one of the plays of the week, if not of the year. Cliff, what? And you have to set it up for the fans who didn't see it. What about that hit by the Alouettes on special teams this past week?
Well, like I said, when I say that Montreal dominated on all aspects of the field, yes, the defense is always outstanding. The offense, last Friday, they were not just clicking, but they were completely on another level, as I like to say. But special teams, I mean, when we talk about special teams, everybody always looks at the kick returner. And again, Stefan Logan, yeah, he's definitely a playmaker, and he did a great job for the most part, that one fumble notwithstanding, in getting the Alouettes, you know, some great field position to start with. But there was one kick that, or one punt return that was, that he made, and it was all thanks to Nicolas Boulet just absolutely waylaying Brendan Gillanders, I believe his name is, on the Red Blacks. He just straight up dummied him.
Anybody who's watching the game, especially me at the stadium, I saw that one coming from him. I don't know how it played on television, but I saw that one coming from a mile away.
Yeah. That was one of those oh moments, like the ones that you're going to find this on YouTube. And if the CFL is smart, like when you talk about like their, you know, top 10 hits of the season or things like that, I definitely think this would definitely make that list, because it was absolutely outstanding. Like Nicolas Boulet is just an absolute freak of nature,
yeah,
an athlete all day long. And for him, like he's been a beast on special teams for years now. And my gosh, this guy is worth his weight in gold. He's just an outstanding player through and through. Just a high motor, loves to play this game, is just hyped on every single play. And for him to just flat out blow this guy up. And as a result, Logan was able to really just turn on the jets and just get some great yardage. Mm-hmm. And my gosh, like I said, Nicolas, outstanding. That was just an outstanding hit as part of an outstanding game. What more can I say about
that? It was one of those plays that even with everybody there at the stadium, you saw it happen, and even the crowd in Ottawa just went, oh.
Yeah.
It was one of those hits.
I was funny because Gillanders, is it Gillanders or Gillanders? Anyways, it was kind of a homecoming game for him because he's actually from the Ottawa region, and he played for the Toronto Argos past couple of seasons, but signed as a free agent this year with the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Okay.
And unfortunately was on the injured list, so he actually missed the first few games for Ottawa. So this was his home debut, if you will. So he was, you know, had to be excited too, and looking to put together a great performance. And just to be absolutely trucked like that by Nicolas Boulet, oh, like one of those kind of I won't say necessarily welcome to the CFL moments, because he's obviously been playing for a couple of years now. But I mean, that's just one of those moments where you're just like, yeah, some days you're the dog, some days you're the hydrant. Yeah. And on that particular play, he was
that's
the hydrant.
Good. That's good. So, Al's, if you just keep it up, Al's. You made us proud this week, as I said. Complete game.
Yeah.
Complete game. Enough said.
There's no other way to put it. It was just an absolute
total
domination and
game. There we go. 3 sentences.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, again, this just proves that, you know, people are going to say what they're going to say about this team, and I get it, absolutely. But every once in a while, you just have to have that faith.
Yeah, some calling for Kevin Glenn to be gone as quarterback. I disagreed. I disagreed with that one. I'm more afraid. I know you're high on him. I'm more afraid now of Rakeem Cato than I am of Kevin Glenn, for some reason. But that's for another. That's another topic for another day. It's another topic for another day.
Well, listen. At the end of the day, numbers don't lie. Five beautiful touchdown passes, and then handing off for a 6th touchdown. And again, I mean, Montreal's offense was just on fire. So I mean, yeah. At this point, there's no replacing Kevin Glenn. There just isn't. I mean, the guy, he knows how to win. He's had some tough losses, but he's also had some great wins, and this has to be up there for him. I think this is definitely the one statement, or the one thing he likes to talk about is statement games. And I find that's a saying that's get used way too often. But in this case, for Kevin Glenn, this past Friday was very much a statement game not just for him, but for the Montreal Alouettes this season.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. Don't forget it is Make Noise Game. I don't remember what it is on Friday.
It is their Make Some Noise Game.
Yeah,
I guess the team is strongly encouraging that you bring noisemakers.
Or they're going to give away Thundersticks.
Or they could do that too. I mean, or just whatever. I guess whatever you have to do to go and make noise, that's
more
important.
More cowbell. Thing. More cowbell.
Oh, you can't go wrong with cowbells.
No, you can't. If anybody's looking, I will not be at the game this week. Cliff, you already know this. I will be dealing with something Arena Football League related. I'll be at the championship game, the Arena Bowl in Phoenix, Arizona. I will be with the Owls and you guys in spirit. I will be taping the game, though, so I can watch the game once I do return. So I hope you enjoy the game, Cliff. And go, Owls, go. That's all I can say. So I hope everybody, hope you guys play well. So,
yeah, and one thing I just want to mention really quick, too, is also the Pure Later Tackle Hunger Games for Montreal.
Yeah, first time I've missed that in years.
So, Alouettes Nation, if you're listening, and, well, of course you're listening, but by all means, be generous. This is the time that you have to do it. You got to be able to show the rest of the league just how we Montrealers can get together and help support our fellow man for a great cause. And it is an absolutely great cause, because every donation, not only do you get a chance to get your picture taken with the Grey Cup, but I also do believe that you have a draw. Usually every year they'll have a player's jersey to be won or some sort of great prize. So, I mean, you know, either bring money, bring non-perishable goods, bring whatever you can to help out. I mean, it's a great cause, and yeah, let's help put this league on notice that Montreal can be a great place, not just to watch a football game, but to also be a great community to help one another. So if you're coming to the game, please don't forget, like I said, either bring some spare change or bring some non-perishable goods.
That's right. And don't forget, if you do that, you should be able to take a picture with the Grey Cup.
How can you go wrong with that? I mean, that's a great prize already.
Can't go wrong. So enjoy the game this week. We will see you next week here on the podcast. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.